Tomorrow marks the 14th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks when four passenger airliners were hijacked by 19 Al-Qaeda terrorists charged with the mission of flying them into buildings on U.S. soil. In his new book, Base Nation, author David Vine examines how the existence of U.S. bases abroad, particularly in Saudi Arabia, were part of Osama bin Laden's professed motivation for the 9/11 attacks. Furthermore, Vine looks to demonstrate that America's sprawling network of overseas bases imposes costs, not only financial but also political, environmental, and moral, that far exceed what the Pentagon is prepared to acknowledge. David Vine is an associate professor of anthropology at American University in Washington, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Very nice to have you with us. With this anniversary of 9/11 upon us once again, when it comes to bases abroad and U.S. bases abroad, what do you want the message to be to get out of how the two, how there is a correlation?
I began this research actually 14 years ago in August of 2001, actually when I became aware of one military base in particular, the base on Diego Garcia in the middle of the Indian Ocean that the United States only has because the U.S. and British governments expelled the entire indigenous people of Diego Garcia and the surrounding archipelago. And this opened my eyes to this huge network of bases the United States has maintained abroad now for 70 years or more since World War II in the early days of the Cold War. And now they number around 800. And the story of Diego Garcia and the people, the Chagossians, who were exiled to make way for the base also opened my eyes to what these bases are doing, how they're impacting local populations, and also led me to ask questions like, why do we need a base in the middle of the Indian Ocean? Is that base protecting us? Is it making us more secure? And I think many of these bases that we have on every continent, and from Germany, Japan, Italy, to Djibouti, Honduras, many of these bases, we just haven't questioned whether these bases are, in fact, making us more secure. And I think we need to begin a very careful conversation and analysis of every last base, because I think they're fundamentally better ways we could be ensuring the security of the United States and of Americans and actually ensuring the security of people globally.
One of the things that shocked me about the book, and we throw numbers around a lot, you just used this number, and it's staggering. So I just hope people will take a moment to stop and think about this. But you maintain we have 800 military bases across the world.
We actually have thousands, including the bases in the United States. The
right.
800 figure
is outside the United States.
Exactly, outside the 50 states and Washington, D.C., and it's based on a Pentagon figure of 686 base sites outside the 50 states and D.C., but the Pentagon's list, which it provides to Congress, is incomplete. It leaves off bases that are well-known in places like Kuwait and as well as secretive bases. So by my estimate, over these 14 years of conducting research, 800 is a good estimate. And meanwhile, the rest of the world, a few countries have foreign bases, Britain, France, Russia, a few others. All those foreign bases combined total about 30. So the United States has about 95% of the world's foreign military bases, that is, bases belonging to one nation on the soil and the territory of another.
Why is it that we have such a intricate and sprawling network, and yet we don't talk about it?
It's complicated, of course, and that is a very good question. Part of it, of course, is that these bases are far away. So it's really members of the military and their family members who perhaps think about them most. But part of the answer is that it's just been an assumption, a basic tenet of U.S. foreign policy going back to World War II and the Cold War, that the United States must maintain hundreds of bases overseas and hundreds of thousands of troops overseas to ensure national security. And that assumption has just not been questioned. And part of the argument of Base Nation and part of what I found is that that in fact it's a quite outdated military strategy, a military strategy designed for the Cold War, which is now more than two decades past, that is not serving us, is actually counterproductive in a range of ways and harming people in the United States, harming people around the world. I think the 9/11 reference is an important one because it's a dramatic way, a dramatic example of how our bases abroad are undermining our security. Bases have led to radicalization, especially in the Middle East. The presence of foreign troops has led to al-Qaeda recruitment. It's been a perfect recruiting tool. So our bases have actually increased the threat, increased the likelihood that there would be people who wish to attack the United States and Americans.
Let's explore that a little bit more in how it has increased that. You write about this in your book. You wrote about this in a New York Times op-ed, and you say that the bases are a source of global anti-Americanism and radicalization. How so? And is it as broad as the network of bases, or is it very scattered?
Well, our bases have generated opposition worldwide of various sorts, protests of quite frequent. Okinawa, Japan is probably the case that people are most familiar with. But you see protests basically wherever there are U.S. bases, from Honduras to Italy, Germany even, where there have been very good relations. And in those cases, mostly, people aren't anti-American. In fact, many of them would say they love America and they love Americans. But what they don't like is U.S. military policy, and they don't like the effects of bases that are occupying their land and that end up feeling too often like an occupying presence. And I think it's worth thinking for folks in the United States to think about what it would feel like to live with a foreign base on our soil, to live next to a foreign base, even if it was a close ally like France or Italy, how we would feel living next to a foreign base with weaponry and the like, or a Chinese base, even anywhere near the borders of the United States. We have hundreds of bases surrounding China, and I think we don't pause to think about what that might feel like and how we would react if there was hundreds of bases or even, a single Chinese base near the U.S. borders. But to get back to the center point of your question, at the extreme, these bases have really inflamed relations with local communities and led to people wishing to do violence to the United States. And the case of our bases occupying Saudi Arabia in particular, as you mentioned, was part of the motivation that Osama bin Laden articulated for the attacks of 9/11. And since then, the presence of U.S. and troops and bases in the Middle East has been shown to have a direct correlation with al-Qaeda recruitment.
What kind of movements, and you write about this, what kind of movements have we seen within the countries that host these bases that look to close them?
We've seen a range of movements, and the vast majority of protests and opposition are nonviolent, the vast majority. Really, al-Qaeda and associated groups would be the only violent examples, with a few very rare exceptions over the last 70 years. Protest movements have arisen. Sometimes they are people-led movements in places like Okinawa in Italy. Other times you see national governments leading the opposition. So the government of Ecuador, there was a base in Manta, Ecuador for a decade, and the lease was coming up in 2009 for renewal, and the president of Ecuador, Rafael Correa, said, okay, we'll renew the lease on the base on one condition, that the United States allows us, Ecuador, to build a base in Miami. And, this was a laugh line, but I think it actually was very helpful in showing how inconceivable it is to people in the United States, the idea of having a foreign military base on our soil. Meanwhile, that is the basic state of affairs around the world. So it's really quite unsurprising that protest and opposition would grow wherever there are U.S. bases. And in many cases, the movements have been successful, including in places like Vieques, Puerto Rico, where people were able to get the Navy to finally leave their land, although they're still struggling to clean up an island that has been fairly decimated by Navy bombing and weapons testing. But there have been other successes from actually parts of Okinawa to Trinidad to France, removed all U.S. bases in the 1960s, and the list goes on.
Which brings us to the question, which you spend a lot of time in the book, of where the who's making money off this? I mean, there's a lot of money here.
That's exactly right, and it's part of the reason why this very sizable, to say the least, network of bases has remained in place so firmly entrenched for decades now, because there's a lot of money to be made. By my very conservative estimates, carried out as part of the research for Base Nation, I found that we are spending somewhere on the order of $85 billion a year maintaining bases and troops overseas. And that doesn't even count Iraq and Afghanistan, where we still have bases and troops. And if you count that, the total rises to around $156 billion a year. And that money's going somewhere. Some of it actually ends up in the economies of the host nations. But they're military contractors that are making millions and billions of dollars building and maintaining these bases, and they thus have a very direct interest in seeing them remain open. And that's part of the inertia that we've seen that has kept so many of these bases open, even when there's no reason, when there's no security reason to keep the bases open. Contractors, because they're making so much money, have a vested interest in seeing them remain open. And meanwhile, U.S. national security and the security of people worldwide suffers just as the profits of these corporations grow.
You quote Major Tim Elliott of the Royal Scots Brigades in the book, who is talking to you and explaining how to build a military base, and says ultimately that you whore it out to a contractor.
That has increasingly been the solution. Since the Vietnam War, you started to see military contractors getting involved in the building and running of bases increasingly, and that accelerated in the late 1990s and with the first Gulf War in Iraq in 1991 in particular, and has expanded even more in the 14 years since the launching of the invasion of Afghanistan in October 2001. So you have major contractors like KBR, the former Halliburton subsidiary, or DynCorp, making literally billions of dollars building and maintaining bases around the world. And meanwhile, we haven't asked the hard and important questions of whether these bases are really needed and whether we could be spending the money better, for example, addressing all the needs of the infrastructure in the United States that has for so long been crumbling. Our schools, our housing, our transportation infrastructure has been neglected while we've been spending tens of billions maintaining and building bases abroad.
Ron Paul talked about this when he was running for president in 2012. Other than that, most candidates, if any, I don't believe anyone is addressing this issue, which brings me to the final question, which is, so where does your optimism lie in looking at the situation and correcting it?
I am quite optimistic. When I began this research 14 years ago, this was an issue that very few people paid attention to, and mostly they were, frankly, on the left. But now you see people across the political spectrum asking questions about why we have so many bases, whether they're protecting us, whether we can afford them. Even Donald Trump, in the past couple weeks, asked, why are we spending so much money defending Germany, defending Japan? So you see Republicans, libertarians like Ron Paul, people on the left, actually increasingly making common cause to, it's one of those rare bipartisan issues where people coming to agree that we don't need as many bases overseas, and that there are better ways to protect our national security, and that actually these bases are in many cases undermining our national security. So that's really where my optimism lies. The issue has become much more mainstream in the 14 years I've been looking at it. So I think there's a growing national conversation about these bases and finding better ways to protect our national security and ensure global security. And there's simply alternatives there to better ways to use our military force.
The name of the book is Base Nation, How U.S. Military Bases Abroad Harm America and the World. It is published by Metropolitan Books. David Vine, thank you very much for being with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Base Nation by David Vine. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.